It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the State Capitol Report. Western Wisconsin leads the nation in farm bankruptcies. We're losing hundreds of dairy farms every year. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel estimates that we've lost more than a quarter of all dairy farms in just 5 years. Some of these were century-old farms passed down among generations until now. Do you live in the Driftless, La Crosse, Vernon, Crawford, Monroe County? We want to hear from you this morning. How's the landscape around you changing? And what do you want state lawmakers to do about it? We're at 1-800-642-1234. That's just one of the things we'll be talking about this morning with Brad Paff. He's a Democratic state senator representing Western Wisconsin. He was elected to the Senate in 2020 after previously serving as the state's top-ranking agricultural official. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Good morning. So you're new to the state Senate. What do you want to accomplish this session?
Well, I am new to the Wisconsin State Senate, and I represent one of the most beautiful parts of the state of Wisconsin, I have to be honest. La Crosse, Mooney, Crawford, and Southern Monroe counties. What I want to be able to accomplish is I want to be able to bring people together. I want to be able to bridge the rural and the urban divide. I want us to come together as a people and tackle the challenges and share the opportunities that we all are going to have here in the great state of Wisconsin. So those are my goals as I begin my term in the Wisconsin State Senate.
So your district represents a lot of farms, a lot of dairy farms, and I want to talk about agriculture. What needs to be done to save our dairy farms?
Well, a number of things need to be done in order to save our dairy farms. But I think probably the most important thing that we need to recognize the fact is that our family farmers are hardworking, honest, dedicated, resilient people. They just want an opportunity every single day in order to get up and be able to make an honest living. The thing is, we need to be able to have markets that are open for them, may they be local, regional, national, or international. We also need to make sure that we have policies that work, not just at the federal level, but also at the state level. So I want to make sure that we have a transportation policy that connects, you know, our farm fields to our international markets. I want to make sure that we have a healthcare policy that recognizes that independent, hardworking people need to have an opportunity to purchase affordable healthcare that's accessible. I want to make sure that we have the interconnection between our small communities and our family farms. Because the thing is that our family farmers need our small communities, and our small communities so desperately need our family farms. They go together. So I think that's what we need to be able to do when it comes to policy in the state of Wisconsin. And we need to take a deep breath. And we need to recognize the fact that there's much more that unites us than divides us. Not everything has to be so terribly partisan. Not everything has to be put in a red box or a blue box. Things need to be recognized the fact We need to recognize the fact that we need to put people before politics, and that's my goal.
Sure. And one of the things you mentioned, you touched on healthcare policy there, and you've been an advocate for getting farmers access to mental health services. I wonder, in Governor Evers' budget, he calls for creating this regional program for farmer mental health. Do you think that's enough to address the problem?
Well, I think it's definitely an important first start, and I compliment the governor and the governor's work throughout in recognizing the fact that we need to recognize the fact that there is real anxiety and stress that's taking place in the countryside, and we need to peel it back a little bit, and we need to talk to people and work with people and meet them in their front yard and speak with them down the gravel road and hear what's going on and how we can just be able to kind of put things together so they people can feel that they have an opportunity. And I do just think that there's too much anxiety and there's too much consternation and stress that's been created. And some of that is a result of the fact that this over partisanship that's taking place right now. So people know me. They know me in this area. They know that, that I'll work very hard in order to make sure that their thoughts and their ideas are heard in the capital.
But I wonder, do we even have enough service providers, mental health providers in rural areas to address the need that we have right now?
Well, the thing is this, is that no, we do not. But what we also, what we do have is this, is that, you know, I was raised on a family farm. My family's been farming in Northern La Crosse County since they first came to this country in the 1800s. There's a real sense of neighborhood. There's a real sense of community. You know, where I grew up and what I believe is this, it doesn't matter if our neighbors are Republicans or Democrats, they're our neighbors. When times are tough, we come together. We come together with one another. We help one another. We celebrate with the birth of a child your neighbor has, and we're there if somebody gets sick. We take care of one another, and that's what we need to get back to. And, you know, that is who I am. Those are the values that I was raised with, and those are the people here in southwestern Wisconsin in the Driftless region. We come together. When a flood takes place in the Kickapoo, community members come together to help one another. They're providing assistance. And that we need to get back to that. And I want to be able to make sure that, you know, we have policies in place that can provide assistance. We need to make sure that our small businesses, and that's why I'm so excited about this Badger bounce back that the governor's come for, to keep our small businesses in place, you know, on our main streets, in our communities, so they're there. Because let's not forget, it's our small businesses that are sponsoring our community Little League teams, that are bringing together the community, helping with our community when it comes to, you know, summer picnics and community events. That's important stuff.
Sure.
So yes, we need to make sure we have our policies in place and we have our healthcare assistance that's there. So, we also need to make sure that we have a community that works together, and that's so important to all of us.
Senator, I want to ask you about one of the policies that you are introducing, one of the bills about food labeling that you've put forward. It would basically ban the labeling of foods as meat or milk if it doesn't contain those products. How would this help farmers?
Well, I'll say this, is that this is a consumer choice bill. And this, what it does is it allows consumers to have a choice at the grocery store of what they wish to purchase. If they wish to purchase milk, dairy milk from a cow, it is. It's a milk from a dairy cow. If they seek to purchase a beverage made from almond or made from any other plant-based, they'll have the opportunity to do that. It'll be proper notification and, you know, the proper labeling that will be on that. But it gives consumers a choice. And so how does that assist our family farmers? Well, our family farmers have put an awful lot of money into marketing their products. And they market their products that clearly labels that it is a dairy product or a beef product that is from here in Wisconsin. And that is something that they've worked hard to capture a brand, Wisconsin Dairy.
Sure.
Worked very hard to capture a brand, and they provide a very nutritious product. So the bipartisan bill that I have am part of, and it's bipartisan, will continue to give consumers that choice.
Well, Senator, I've got a caller on the line that wants to speak with you. We're going to go to David next. Good morning, David.
Hi. Good morning.
Where are you calling from, and what's your question?
I'm calling from the Eastman area. Just a couple of comments. One is, I think the youth of today, while those that grew up on farms may love farming, but the idea of working 15 to 20 hours a week for a lot of young people isn't their idea of a successful life or a fulfilling life. And so a lot of them are leaving the farm, family farms, which I think impacts it. But I think more important is tax policy, both at the state and federal level. When we hear what's potentially going on at the federal level with increasing the business tax rates, which a lot of family farms are, they're incorporated as partnerships and subject to potentially higher income taxes. And then the estate tax, a lot of successful farmers have a lot of value on their farms. And when you talk about raising the estate tax up to 45%, a lot of young people, if they're going to inherit the farm, either have to literally go into significant debt because what they're inheriting is subject to that estate tax. And that hampers their ability to continue to thrive and grow as well.
Sure, David. Thank you. Senator, tax
policy. First of all, David, good morning. And it's good to hear from you. And I hope things are well in Crawford County there, up on the ridge in Eastman. It's a beautiful part of the state. But, you know, David brings up a number of good points. And that is that farming is hard work. And we all recognize that it is hard work, but it's also very rewarding work. And it gives people an opportunity to be outside. It gives people an opportunity to craft their skill. So there's an awful lot of, agriculture, again, employs one out of every nine people in the state of Wisconsin. It's more than just farming. It's also when it comes to logistics and transportation and insurance, finance, there's an awful lot, as well as food processing. There's an awful lot as part of our state economy when it comes to agriculture.
But Senator, to David's point, do you worry about tax policy? Is that going to hurt our family farms?
Well, without a doubt, we're very, very conscientious when it comes to tax policy. We need to make sure that when we look at our property taxes, when we look at estate taxes, income taxes, any type of tax policy, we need to take a very good look at that. We need to make sure that we have opportunities for one generation to take on the family farm from the next generation. So that's very important. We need to continue to have a tax policy, one that gives people an opportunity, but one that's also, very equitable and fair.
Yeah.
So that is something that I definitely am taking a look at, and I will make sure that we have a tax policy, one that encourages people to get into small businesses, particularly in the agriculture.
Yeah. We're speaking with State Senator Brad Paff. I'm Molly Stenz, and you're listening to the State Capitol Report this morning. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. Back in a flash. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz. We're speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Brad Paff of Onalaska. His district covers much of the Driftless area, communities along the Mississippi River. Do you live in Vernon or Crawford or La Crosse or Monroe County? What do you need most from state government right now? We're at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Senator, the state's now buying bottled water for the residents of French Island in your district, whose wells, they were found to have too much PFAS chemical in them. This is the island that houses the La Crosse Regional Airport, an airport that's used firefighting foam with PFAS for decades. And I want to hear from Darcy Foss, who's the head of the DNR's Environmental Management Division.
DNR and DHS will continue to work with the residents of French Island, the town, city, and county officials to aid them in providing emergency safe drinking water to address these concerns.
Senator, what needs to happen to clean up this mess?
Well, first of all, through no fault of their own, too many people, too many residents in the town of Campbell in French Island have PFAS in their drinking water. And so what needs to happen is, first of all, the local, state, and federal government officials need to continue to listen and hear and work with our local residents. Second of all, at the state level, I'm very excited that Governor Evers put in his budget funding to provide assistance for remediation as well as for well testing, because that is the needs to be done, and we need to get it done as quickly as possible.
So how would that money be distributed, that $20 million in the state budget?
Well, it's my understanding that those dollars would be going out to the local unit of government, which would be the town of Campbell, which would then be working with the individual homeowners that have their individual wells. in order to assist when it comes to testing, as well as the remediation, mitigation of PFAS that's in the water. And there's things that are being discussed, water filtration systems as well. All of that is needs to be on the table, and it's being discussed. But this is an unfortunate and scary situation that we have in the town of Campbell. And as I said earlier, it's through no fault of their own, of the homeowners, that they have a situation right now in which there's uncertainty when they turn on their tap.
Yeah, and I want to go to the phones now. We have another caller for you, Senator. George from Monroe is calling in. Good morning, George.
Hi. I wonder if the guests could comment on the state's role in promoting the mega farms, such as the 5,500 cow operations in Greene County and in Rock County that, are basically owned by an outsider, had very marginal, if not failed, tests with respect to their impact on the groundwater, and yet they get approved, and the result is, what's probably economically a risk of overproduction as it is, gets buttressed by operations like that. What's that do to the family farm?
Well, it's a very good question, George, and I tell you, I hear it an awful lot, and I will say this, is the vast, vast majority of the dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin are family owned. And not only that, is the average herd size in the state of Wisconsin is approximately 160 cows. But having said that, I hear your concerns there. You rightly mentioned that the Wisconsin DNR has a permitting process working with the local units of government, the local land and water conservation department. Not only that, is there is a federal permitting process as well, through the Natural Resource Conservation Service. The thing is that there are dairy farms of all sizes and shapes here in the state of Wisconsin. But I thank you for your question, and I will say that this is something, again, where our local units of government do have that permitting process, the local, state, and the federal.
Doesn't the state control permitting for large dairy farms?
Well, true, through the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, but at the same time, if a concentrated animal feeding operation has more than a certain amount of animals, it has to get sign off as far as when it comes to the animal waste storage by our federal partners as well.
Sure. And before we run out of time, I really want to get your thoughts on broadband. I know that's another big issue all over the state, but particularly in our rural areas. And you serve on the governor's task force on broadband access. They're asking for more money, for more grant programs. Do you think that approach, these grant dollars, will that solve the problem and get our rural areas connected to the internet?
Well, I'll tell you what, it needs to be all hands on deck. We need to take an all hands on deck approach. And it's there's no one size that fits all when it comes here. We need to be able to have a public and private partnership. We need to look at all available technologies. In some parts of the state, obviously wireless works quite well. But in the part of the state that I represent, with the rolling hills, coulees, and valleys, fiber works very well. Some are using satellite, but we need to make sure that we have as many people as possible at the table in this conversation. But the one thing that I've learned is this past year during this global health pandemic is, in order for our economy, as well as our schools, our health care, and public safety, police and fire and EMT, we need to be able to have high-speed internet. And that's broadband is front and center when it comes to my policy proposals and what I hope to get accomplished in the Wisconsin State Senate.
So you think these grants will get us there in this next budget?
I think they're an important, very, very, very important part of this. But we also need to have our federal partners at the table as well, using the state resources, working with our federal partner, and working with the private sector. We're going to continue to chip away here and to make progress, because we need to get there. We must get there.
Sure. Well, Senator Brad Paff, Democratic State Senator from the 32nd Senate District, including La Crosse, Vernon, Crawford, Southern Monroe County, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's a real opportunity, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day. Up next is news. Then your state capitol report continues with Republican State Senator Andre Jacques of DePere. We're going to take a look at a range of bills, including child protective services, health care, vaccines, and more. What are your top priorities? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is your state capitol report. It's called Ethan's Law. It was named for a 7-year-old boy from Manitowoc who died after being abused at his foster home. One of Ethan's foster parents is now on trial for murder, and this is a man with a prior conviction for child abuse. If this bill becomes law, it would close a loophole that lets government agencies place a child in the home of a known abuser. And we're speaking to its authors today. Ethan's Law is just one of many things State Senator Andre Jacques has been working on lately. Do you live in Door County or Kewaunee? Maybe on the north shore of Lake Winnebago? What issues do you want to see your state lawmakers address? We're at 1-800-642-1234. Andre Jacques is a Republican state senator from DePere. The district he represents stretches east of Appleton and over to Door County. Senator Jacques, welcome back.
Good morning, Molly. Great to be back on the program.
Good morning. So tell me about Ethan's Law. What a tragic story this was. What inspired you to write this law?
You know, as the father of young kids, including one who just turned 7, the age that Ethan was when he died, it really is horribly tragic. And there were red flags all over the place that should have stopped this placement, and yet there was nothing in the law. In fact, there were things in the law that really prohibited the consideration that we needed to have in there as far as eliminating the gray areas and having clear black and white restrictions on a child in need of protective services not being placed into greater harm's way. And when you have somebody with just the series of violent altercations, as well as the violent child abuse over his own children that he'd previously been convicted of, it's staggering what took place. And I know in the past you've had Doug Schneider on the program. He really did some yeoman's work in illustrating this through the Gannett papers as far as everything that really was bypassed in terms of how many loopholes there were in the system. And this is something that I'm very proud we have on the precipice of being able to be signed into law. We were able to get very strong bipartisan support through the committee and Senate floor process, and hopefully we'll complete the Assembly Committee passage later this week.
Have you spoken with the governor at all about it? Does he intend to sign it?
You know, I don't have any firm feelings on that. As far as I would imagine, with the very strong bipartisan support, I think the agency has been neutral. But this is something that and having served on the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board and being joined in that by not only Senator Johnson, who is also on the board, but a number of my Democratic colleagues in the legislature who have actually co-sponsored the legislation, I do feel like this is something that, again, there's really no justification for why you would be placing somebody with a child abuse of a physical nature, having them responsible for the care of somebody who is just leaving an at-risk situation or been abused themselves already. This is just something that makes sense and something that has, frankly, been welcomed by a lot of the human services workers that I've talked to in terms of not feeling pressure to make a placement in a situation that they don't feel is safe.
Yeah. And what do you think we need to do to encourage more caring adults to become foster parents?
Well, you know, I think certainly taking steps like this, I've had strong support from the Lakeshore foster families and friends, of course, in that area where Ethan had passed. But so many foster parents that I talk to, it is something where, you know, they just are so mad. And the fact that there are placements where children are being put at risk, you know, hopefully we can encourage more people to take that step. I know one of the other bipartisan issues that I'm working on right now deals with permanency plans and restoring what we had in place before, which is sharing the child's story with them. And right now we trust them with the care of the child, but they really need to know everything that's going on to be an effective foster parent. And, you know, I think there are certainly other things that we can do in the system to show that, that they are valued. I think that is certainly one of the issues that I have heard is that right now, it is word of mouth from those that are already fostering children, and they want to know that that they are going to be respected, that they are going to have, you know, both the state and county partner with them, as opposed to put them in difficult positions without resources.
Yeah. And I saw you also had a bill that would grant legal immunity to anyone who helps out in good faith with cases of child abuse. Currently, that legal immunity, as I understand it, only extends to people who are mandatory reporters, people like pediatricians and teachers. Why do more people need this immunity?
You know, that's actually part of some federal funding requirements as well. It's called CAPTA. It's one of a couple pieces of what's going through the system right now where you do have, again, those that are involved in providing medical examinations that need to have some immunity in making reports. It is something that I don't think has been abused. I care pretty deeply about protecting our children. They're our state's most valuable resource. And it is something that, particularly has been exacerbated as a result of COVID-19 and having children out of school. You haven't had less child abuse that's taken place, but you haven't had as many interventions in terms of places where children are going. And it is something that, you know, just as we've seen with domestic violence, human trafficking, we've seen spikes in terms of the actual crime that's taking place, but we, aren't necessarily getting to effective reporting or solving some of those situations. And those are some of the other things that I'm trying to address again as well. I know I've been on the program before talking about human trafficking and addressing the demand side as well as victim services. I have a domestic violence lease bill that's passed unanimously out of my committee as well this session. So,
I saw
a lot of different pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah, and one of it, I imagine, is funding. I saw there was a provision in the governor's budget for $15 million in block grants to help counties with their child welfare caseloads. Do you support that?
I don't know if I saw the specific increase that you're talking to there. I mean, there is going to be an issue with the governor increasing spending. I think it was 8.8%, close to 10%, and dependent on some tax and fee increases that aren't likely to be there at the end. But certainly one of the things that I was a very strong proponent of last session, I believe, was $30 million. Through the state budget that we were able to do to bolster child in need of protective services programs at the county level, things that were are going to be affected by something like Ethan's law in terms of having social workers and addressing backlogs that previously existed. So
yeah.
Certainly there are separate block grant funds as well. The state was a little late to the game in terms of applying for those funds, but now that we've received them, they have put together plans as far as child care and other resources to help to help children and families. And so that's certainly something that I'm very interested in. And I think, yes, there's going to be some significant resources put towards children and families in this budget, certainly, and very supportive of that.
Yeah. Senator Jacques, I saw that you authored a bill that would ban health insurers from denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions. Don't we already have that under the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, so it currently is part of the Affordable Care Act. However, not at the state level. And, of course, there have been various court cases that have been out there. I think this is basically saying to all residents of the state that regardless of what happens at the federal level, that in Wisconsin, that component of pre-existing condition protection is going to remain there and it's going to be strong. In fact, I'm pleased that we went from having all Republicans and about half of Democrats in support of the bill last session to a unanimous 92-0 vote in the assembly already this session. But it deals with, guaranteed issue, no exclusions, no lifetime caps, and the community rating provision. So it is going to be as strong as anything that's out there in terms of pre-existing conditions. And it's just something that I think, we had moved to that point largely in the healthcare debate previously, but it's something that is going to be, I think, one of the foundations of whatever, health plan the state level looks at going into the future.
Sure. We're speaking with State Senator André Jacques of De Pere, and this is the State Capitol Report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. This is your State Capitol Report. We have State Senator André Jacques of De Pere with us this morning. He represents Door and Kewaunee counties, parts of Brown, Manitowoc, Calumet, and Outagamie counties. Are you a constituent? What problems should state lawmakers be tackling? Let us know. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Senator, I want to talk about some of your COVID-related bills. You authored one that would ban the government from requiring the COVID vaccine. Doesn't current law allow people to opt out already?
There currently is an exemption. However, it does not apply to the COVID vaccine in terms of an emergency health declaration. It also is something where we have had difficulty in enforcing our existing exemptions. And I've heard that from healthcare employees. I've heard that from the general public, whether that's talking about a religious exemption or a health exemption in actually many cases. In fact, there have been court cases where after the fact you have had Wisconsin employers that have, it's been found that they have not abided by the exclusions, but it is something that, according to our legislative attorneys, there is the ability for vaccines to be mandated under a public health emergency, and same thing with church closures. And, there are a lot of concerns with that. Obviously, they haven't litigated the First Amendment concerns as far as what might take place in a court case there. But, they're actually among several COVID-related bills that I've put forward.
Yeah.
Going back to last session, dealing with telehealth, dealing with additional flexibility for local governments or remote court hearings, and pleased to see that some of them have already passed both chambers of the legislature.
Do you worry at all that our state won't reach herd immunity?
It seems like the vaccine rollout has been going fairly well after some initial fits and starts. I think by and large, what we found is when you have a mandate, when you have coercion, you're not necessarily going to persuade people or achieve a better rate of vaccination than in this case. There have been studies that show neighboring countries of similar demographics where you did not achieve any higher rate of vaccination when you had a mandate in place. And it is something where, it's very difficult to compel that anyways. I think ultimately it has to be through better communication. It has to be through a full explanation of the risks or research. But by and large, I think most people have indicated that they are going to be receiving the vaccine. And so it is certainly well underway.
Are you planning to get vaccinated?
Well, I'm not going to get into anything personal that way, but I will say I'm certainly not anti-vaccine. And the COVID vaccine is a little different from other vaccines in terms of the process that it went through. But I certainly expect that members of my family will be vaccinated at the point that they are eligible to do so. And, you know, it's certainly something that my children have been vaccinated as well. But there can be certainly concerns just in terms of which variant of a vaccine somebody might choose to receive as well. And then, you know, that availability might not be something that is available on the front end of the vaccination process as well.
So, right. It feels like we're in this race against the variants to immunize everyone before there's possible mutations.
Well, and the fact is that, you know, those mutations are already occurring where there's questions as to, you know, the existing vaccines, how well do they protect against different variants? And there's certainly a lot of questions out there in terms of various subpopulations and just exactly, I mean, there's still questions out there, but I think certainly a lot of people have been pleased that they've been able to, you know, receive it for those in the highest risk categories.
Sure, sure. And I saw that you had a bill that would also prohibit employers from requiring vaccination for their employees. Would that be the case even for public workers, school teachers, kind of highly public positions?
That would be, when you look at the vaccine, it's meant to protect yourself personally as opposed to, you know, it isn't something where it necessarily even keeps you from getting the virus. It's supposed to mitigate the possibility of it becoming a serious case. But receiving the vaccine isn't necessarily going to prevent you from transmitting it to others. And to answer your question, yes, it would apply to public employers as well. In fact, that was one of the situations that already has been brought up where you've had a number of employees laid off at Rockhaven, a nursing home facility run by the county in Janesville, where you had a number of employees that were reporting adverse reactions to the virus. I'm sorry, to the vaccine, which is certainly something that whether they call them bad batches or the like, but have been reported elsewhere. But, you know, again, you have had situations where absent this sort of legislation, those that have basically had life-threatening, almost life-ending complications previously, things like Guillain-Barré syndrome, would not be able to, you know, use that as a basis potentially to not have to, you know, have a vaccine in order to continue their employment, provide for their family.
Yeah. Well, I want to switch gears before we run out of time with you. You have so many bills. You've got so much going on. And I want to talk about roads because, you know, our roads, they need some help. And I saw you had a bill that would direct some of the sales taxes from, you know, buying or leasing a car to go to fund transportation projects like road repairs that we need. Why do we need to change the way we fund roads?
Oh, absolutely. So I think when you have transportation-related sales tax, it only makes sense when you have those vehicle-related purchases for some of that money to go towards repairing our roads and diversifying the funding for our transportation fund. It's something that I think there's very broad bipartisan support for. It's certainly something that I think we have seen, you know, it needs to be a priority for our economy. It is something that has been a priority, but the problem is by the time through the budget process, people actually come to an agreement, it's at the end of the process where you either have to not spend it or bond for it. And I think, you know, on a bipartisan basis, there's concerns about putting things on the credit card. At one point, we had gotten north of 20% of the transportation fund was going to debt service. So I think the extent to which we can take the growth that we have seen in sales tax and put some of that towards towards the transportation fund, where we've now protected from various fund raids, it is something where we're going to be able to, you know, say transportation is a priority. We are going to provide that funding for it and do it in a way that there's less pressure to borrow or to look at other areas of the budget. It really is something that I think helps our long-term planning, and certainly something I've had, you know, positive conversations with Secretary-designee Thompson about. And sure, there are other process reforms, things that we can do to stretch existing dollars. But
do you, yeah, Senator, though, do you risk kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, and kind of taking money out of the same pot that goes to fund schools?
No, I really don't think that you do, in the sense that the amount that would be going on a phased-in basis over to the transportation fund is less than the traditional growth that we have seen in sales tax revenue over the last several budgets. And it is something that, you know, if we say transportation is a priority, I mean, certainly there's going to be plenty of money available for additional spending in other areas. And we have seen spending growth over the last several budgets. But, you know, I think, you know, when you have various things like the gas tax that are based on a diminishing stream of revenue because of fuel efficiency, and also something that is concerning because it's a regressive tax, I think when you're able to diversify to something like the sales tax, which is consumption based and something that, you know, again, I think has more of that that broad based support, I think, you know, it just makes sense to say that we are going to, you know, just a portion of you know, that vehicle related sales tax that we already have coming into the state coffers is going to go towards transportation, as opposed to having to rehash this, you know, this argument at the start of every budget process of should we put additional money into transportation, or should we look at, you know, a very small number of potential revenue streams to add that funding.
Right, because gas taxes are short of where the budget thought they would be, but sales taxes are up, so that's where the money is, so to speak. Senator Jacques, we are up against the clock, but I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. No, it's great to be back on the program. And, you know, I think I've had 14 bills that have passed the Senate already, another four that have passed the Assembly. So hopefully we can get as many of them to pass both chambers and get a whole bunch more. And appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. André Jacques is a Republican state senator from De Pere. Just ahead, it can be hard enough to get a vaccine appointment as it is. Now imagine doing it blind. We talk about that and more after the news. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.